The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Well, we are heading into the weekend and some of us will be looking forward to enjoying a nice glass of wine or possibly even two. Isn't it often the case, though, that you're standing in the supermarket or the off-licence staring blankly because you're just overwhelmed, really, by the variety of red and white wines on offer? And not only that, you're looking at the prices and you don't know whether you're getting good value or not. So I'm joined now by a Longford woman who has worked in the wine trade for over 25 years. She's, in fact, one of the first women in the world to get an MBA in wine. I didn't even know there was such a thing. Mary Gaynor, good morning.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for inviting me here.
Well, listen, we're going to talk about the MBA and other things in just a moment. For our listeners, maybe who have any queries or questions for Mary on wine, or if you're going to a dinner party this weekend, text in and she might be able to help you out. 51551. So, Mary, just to go back with yourself for a moment, you didn't start out in the wine trade. You actually worked in the bank.
Yes, I worked in the Bank of Ireland for many years.
Okay, and how did that transition happen from bank to wine?
How the transition came from bank to wine, I think they were getting rid of staff in the late 80s. And I decided, well, time to go. But many years before that, I had been on holidays with my late sister in London. And I found a leaflet on a seat on the tube, and it was all about the Wine and Spirit Education Trust courses, and I just picked it up and put it in my bag and I said, well, I'll contact these people when I get home. And I did, and I subsequently went on and did several of their wine courses, including the diploma.
So what appealed to you about the courses? Because back then, I suppose, wine was something that we knew very little about.
It wasn't really the wine end of it, Catherine, really, believe it or not. When I first looked at the literature, it was all about the geography, and it was probably the only thing I was good at in school was geography. So, and then, you know, obviously the wine end of it, as you realise with wine, you need to, at least you have to know the countries, the rivers, the mountains, the lakes, whatever it is, and the different areas. So that really appealed to me, so it went on from there.
Well, I actually went down, I did the course, the 4-day course, which you do down in Ishtig. And
Thomastown.
Sorry, I was staying in Inishtig, but the course is in Thomastown. Your wine academy is Thomastown.
Yes.
So, I mean, but what sort of people do the course? It's not just all experts who come down and do it.
No.
Hence why I was there.
Well, no, you get a great variety of people coming to do it. Obviously, loads of people have an interest in wine and they would like to, and Inishtig, Thomastown, all of that area is lovely area to spend a few days holidays.
Beautiful,
and do a course, and they have lots of very nice restaurants they can eat in the area. And no, I've had a great variety of people. I would think probably, you know, I had a bomb disposal expert who was serving in Afghanistan who needed a few days peace and quiet and came down to do the course. And I've had several Chinese students and they're delightful. You know, they just send you one email and they arrive on your doorstep. You know,
is wine becoming quite a huge big industry in China?
Yeah. Wine education and wine consumption is starting to be huge in China.
Okay.
And you get, you know, people just need a break from everyday life and they just decide. And then you've obviously all the people in the industry. I train a lot of staff that work for wine importing companies and supermarkets and hotels. You know, you get a great gambit right across the board.
So talk to us about the MBA in wine. What does that involve?
Well, the wine MBA, it was in 2001, the Bordeaux Business School initiated the first wine MBA course. And they just wanted to select a variety of people from different aspects of the business all around the world. So we had winemakers on it, we had marketeers on it, we had people who designed boxes on it, we had, you know, all different, you know, and I was very much involved in the education aspect of it. So obviously they just picked a great selection and we went to Bordeaux and then we did a huge amount of work in Bordeaux, obviously on, you know, the future of the wine market. And then we went to Japan, spent a little time in the Keio Business School in Japan to look at the future markets there, in obviously the Asian markets. And then we did wine marketing in the University of Adelaide in South Australia. And then after that, we just came back to Bordeaux for a little while. And then we went to down to South America, went to the Universidad Católica in Santiago. And that was to study viticultural economics.
Wow.
And then we went to Davis, which is sort of the mecca, which was finance, and more finance.
So how long did the course take to complete?
It took, we came back and forth home the odd time in between times, about 18 months.
Right.
Yeah. And it was really, really grueling, I have to say.
So when you talk about that and how much effort you put into it, how much personal finance as well?
Oh, huge. Yes, but I have to say, I got a small grant from the wine industry, and I got a large loan from the Bank of Ireland. Thank you very much. And obviously, I have a great family. I know you said Longford was the, what did you describe it on Tuesday as, the cultural wastelands of the Midlands?
They were not my words.
Yes. Well,
that was a setup of a debate.
Yes. Well, I have a great family. My mother and my aunt and brothers and everything all dug me out along the way.
Yeah. But I suppose, you know, throughout the Celtic Tiger, we all became experts in some shape or form in wine. And I mean, there's been such an explosion in the wine industry here. Does it bother you that people call themselves experts when in fact, you know, there's so much detail and there's so much involved in what you have done and what you've gone through in order to get your education, I suppose?
Well, Catherine, you know, I think you can never be an expert in anything, because I do some study every single day, you know, and just you have to keep up with current trends. I think it's slightly annoying when you see somebody who probably competently can use a corkscrew calling themselves wine experts. That's a little bit irritating. But there are a lot of great professionals in this business. And we're very lucky in this country. We have a lot of several masters of wine. We have a couple of other people with an MBA in wine. So we are very well served by professionals. But we tend to stay in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, as I said to you, I think to your research, I'm a bit like a ghost. I'm in the background all the time and I just make my presence felt every now and then.
Are we an important industry are we an important target market for the wine industry, as in Ireland?
We wouldn't be, because our population is too small. Mm-hmm. But we are, we have I'd say the consumers would have a higher spend than they would have in the UK. Meaning, if they go out to buy a bottle of wine, they spend a little bit more. They spend a little bit more, and obviously, and then we have this huge food culture in this country. You know, obviously, in the last few years, you know, every paper you pick up, there's articles on food, and I'm always amazed that people who are so fussy about where everything comes from food wise, you know, where's the beef come, where's the lamb come from, and then they'll pick number 33 when it comes to the wine list without asking, you know, sort of saying, is this, you know, asking any advice.
Well,
I think it's whether they just were a bit uncomfortable. Oh, I wouldn't want the waiter. No, I know nothing about wine.
Yeah.
Touch about it.
But I suppose there's so much to think about. And certainly my eyes were opened up, because there's the blend of grape varieties and the vintage and the region of origin and the price and the bottle. And, you know, and so what do Irish people look for, or what should we be looking for in a restaurant?
I think in the last number of years, I think the consumer has got lazy, is probably the best way to describe it. You know, they have a few grape varieties and they pick the same ones over and over and over again, like Sauvignon Blanc, followed by Pinot Grigio. And, you know, there's loads of other stunning grape varieties. You know, I don't know who started this trend a few years ago of, you know, denouncing Chardonnay. Some stunning wines made from Chardonnay. And there's loads and loads of more interesting grape varieties around the world. Not that to say that Sauvignon Blanc, there's great Sauvignon Blanc and there's lovely Pinot Grigio, but there's loads of other ones.
Yeah.
And I think people should be slightly more experimental.
Because we tend to do that. If you find a bottle that you like, you drink it over and over, or you order it, or a grape that you like. Yeah. I'm a desperate one. I don't like Merlot.
Yeah.
I don't like Merlot. Plain and simple, I don't like Merlot. And you know, I'm now experimenting a little bit more, because, you know, you can find one that you like.
Yes,
and drinking the same glass of wine is like ordering the same dinner, I suppose.
Day in, day out, or wearing the same clothes day in, day out.
Absolutely. Okay, well, listen, there are loads of queries coming in here. Could Mary recommend some soft, fruity red wines? And that comes in from Kay.
Soft, fruity red wines. Well, I think, I hate to say it, Catherine, I think Kay will have to try Merlot. Tempranillo is lovely. It's lovely, lovely, soft Spanish Tempranillo.
Okay. Is it true, Mary, that wines taste different depending what shape glass you drink from? That comes in from Susie in Waterford.
Yes, they do. Yes. I'm quite horrified. And sometimes they go to visit people's homes and they'd have a kitchen that would be worth, you know, the price of a small car, or maybe a very large car. And then that in one particular instance, I think the wine we got, it was in tumblers. Yeah, it does. You need tulip-shaped glasses.
And why does that make a difference?
Because they, when a tulip-shaped glass just below, you know, about an inch and a half below the rim, is going to capture all the bokeh. So you're going to get all those lovely noses. All the nose is going to be captured.
Okay, so in some of those, the new modern restaurants that are that I eat in Dublin, and you get your wine served in a tumbler glass. I hate that. I hate drinking wine out of it. But I just thought it was a psychological thing because I'm used to drinking wine with a stem, well, wine glass with a stem.
Well, I think one time in the school, I experimented with, put the same wine into a tumbler, put it into a goblet and I put it into a proper wine glass. And nobody would believe it was the same wine.
Really?
In glasses. Yeah.
Really. And what's your opinion then? There's also a couple of restaurants recently that I've eaten out in where the wine, so you order your wine from the wine list and then it comes decanted in a glass bottle.
Well, it depends on how, if the wine is very young, it might open it up a little bit. And if it was very old, it might be. How age, do you remember how old
no,
it was?
No, but I think it was casked wine. So cask, I think it's wine. This new
oh,
sort
yes,
of.
Oh, yes, where it comes in, it comes in a large. It depends. That's perfectly fine for if you're buying wine within a particular price range. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a touch of the, I was going to say house wine, which is a very derogatory term because people always assume house wine is not of good quality and it should be of excellent quality because it's a great reflection on the restaurant.
On the establishment, absolutely.
On the establishment, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We love Zinfandel, but find it impossible to get it in Dublin.
Zinfandel.
Zinfandel. Any ideas?
They shouldn't have any great problems finding it. If they go to any of their, what area of Dublin are they in? Because there are lots of specialist wine shops.
Zinfandel.
Yeah, there is lots of, you know, you shouldn't really have any problem.
And she's saying any other similar wines you might recommend?
Zinfandel is big and beefy, as it were. What else would I recommend in the same line? Has she tried Pinotage from South Africa?
Okay.
Yeah. And another stunning wine I tasted recently, and that it's not that familiar, is the Bonarda. A Bonarda grape variety, and it's grown in Argentina. It's an Italian grape variety grown in Argentina.
Okay, fantastic. Brida wants to know, I'm having a party soon for 60 people. Food will be turkey, ham, quiche, salads. It sounds like it's going to be sort of a cold spread buffet. Yeah. Any suggestions for wines?
Turkey, I always suggest something like a Macon Looney.
Okay.
You know, it's you know, it's not too dry. It's a nice bit of fruit in it, and it will practically go with everything.
And what would you say, Mary? I mean, do we use the staff in supermarkets and off licence?
We
enough?
Don't. We don't.
That's yeah. I mean, yeah, you really it's should back, not back be embarrassed back. Or in any way going in to ask questions. And
yeah, why? Well, it's the same as I just said about restaurants. They'd be asking where the potatoes came from, where the meat came from, and then they'll want to ask anything about the wine. It's the very same. You should be asking. You should get friendly with in the supermarket. And also, don't forget your specialist off licence. They do a phenomenal job because they're very well-trained staff who are there, who will assist you in any way and would even say to you, look, it, I think, Catherine, you've had that bottle about three times recently. Would you not try another one of, you know, from somewhere else?
Mm.
And again, you see wonderful wine lists. You know, I worked in a wine list for a new wine bar in Kilkenny recently. And we, you know, I was given a great brief. And we have an amazing selection of wines. You know, wonderful wines from Portugal, Spain, Argentina, Italy, you know. You know, amazing, you know, totally different grape varieties. Nobody, well, that are not familiar to the general public. And everybody is loving it at the moment.
Well, I suppose when I go into an off-licence or a specialised off-licence, you feel that you're getting, you know, the proper information and that people know what they're talking about, I suppose.
Yeah.
I also know if I'm going into a specialist off-licence, I'm probably going to spend twice what I would in the supermarket.
Oh, well, that's the idea, Catherine. you'll be charmed to death. And
yeah. But is it realistic in the supermarket to feel that the staff there, should there be somebody who's able to talk you through the wines?
Yes, they probably, yes, you do get some supermarkets, you know, you've got great speciality supermarkets, you know, down there's a great one in Waterford and there's always somebody on hand who will know the wines very well and could give you assistance and even tell you little things like the quantity you should be buying for a party or, you know, they can you can leave it, you know, if you have some left over, which is seldom ever the case, but that you can even bring them in, the, you know, show them the recipes you're using and they can recommend wines.
And what's your take on, you know, these the small off-licenses that you go into, or the specialised off-license, and they talk about this small vineyard in, you know, the north of France, or this small vineyard here, there. And then you've got the likes of your Tesco's or your Super Values, who have their own brand wines. So you can imagine these huge vineyards and this sort of mass production. Is there a sort of a disparity within the wine trade itself, and the way the industry is going?
Well, you see, obviously, large supermarket chains have, they would need a very large supplier, because obviously if you're going to supply all the chain, you're going to need a very large supplier. And obviously how their prices, they, because of, obviously you're talking about they're going to buy in large quantities. Whereas a small specialist of license who would have maybe a small producer who's only has a small holding, maybe down the south of France or maybe in Italy or maybe somewhere else, well, he wouldn't be able to supply Tesco's because he wouldn't be producing enough. That's the difference.
Okay, do all white wines contain sulfides? Some wines seem to irritate my arthritis and I wonder what wines I should avoid. That comes in from Joanna.
Well, now, I'm not a medical expert, but all wines do contain some sulfites, some more than others. And I'm sorry, Joanna, this is not my field.
No worries at all.
I'm sorry.
What does Mary think of supermarkets separating their wines into colours rather than regions? Is there any logic to it?
I prefer regions.
Yeah.
But I is there any logic to it in colours? Maybe. You know, there's different trends, and it was a trend at one stage and then people went back to areas. I know when I'm faced with all the colours, I can never find anything.
I'm
nearly like a dope with my mouth open looking at the shelves. Yeah.
But I suppose that's it in regions as well. Yeah. I mean, for a long time, I always walked past the French wines because I could never understand. I mean, with the New World wines, you could see whether it was a Shiraz or Cab Sav, but with French wines, the labelling is different.
Yes, the labelling is different. Well, now you have much more French wines with the grape variety on the bottle.
In the past, it was always the area?
The area, yes. And then, obviously, when you do a wine course, Catherine, then you know what grapes are grown in what area. You know, obviously, the great clangers, any of us whoever did a little worked in retail, you know, I hate Chardonnay, but I love Chablis. And you'd be thinking, right, OK, that's wonderful, because it's one of the great classics made from a Chardonnay.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you think of the labelling? You know, when you're in the supermarket and there's the little explanation, say number 22, and it gives you all the, you know, what it tastes like. Are we right to take all that information on board and take it at face value?
I'm always slightly suspicious, because I reckon there's probably somebody locked in a room making up these descriptions. not always, but you know, I sometimes wonder. Yeah.
Okay. Another thing. You know, and this is something that myself and my friends have talked about as well. If you're going to a dinner party, and you bring two nice bottles of wine and you've spent, you know, a fair bit of money on them, you know, over the €8 or the €10, and then you arrive and the sort of wine that they're serving is not something that you like. How does one deal with that situation?
Yeah, and they disappear into the ether. Yeah. Well, how I got over that problem many years ago was, if you bring in a nice bottle of red, take the cork out and say you have it at room temperature and it's just ready to drink now.
And so arrive with it open is the trick.
Yes, the cork, you know, just have the cork out, say you had it. It's perfect, you know, you've just erased it. It's perfect for drinking. So then it can't disappear.
They can't take it away.
Many times when you go into somebody's house, you buy a bottle you'd like to try yourself. You mightn't have tried it before. So it would be, you know, it's an opportunity for you to try it as well.
Yeah, it's always an awkward one, though, you know, when you're trying to sneak back in for the bottle that you brought.
I try and bring another bottle as well, so you don't look a bit mean about it.
Pat from Cork says, supermarket staff have no idea about wine. The vast majority of wines in supermarkets are drinkable, but cheap.
Well, I think Pat has been a bit unkind to the supermarkets, because I know I do training for a very large supermarket group here. I don't know whether I'm allowed to mention name or not. A Super Value.
Go for it, yeah.
Super Value.
Yeah.
And there's... I've been training their staff for a number of years, and you get a lot of staff who are very well, you know, well educated. They've all passed their WSET exams.
Okay.
And but in other supermarkets, it depends. You know, somebody could be on a day off. You can't be sort of somebody could be on holidays when you go in. And inexpensive. You know, I don't say think supermarket totally sort of go for the cheap end. There's going to have inexpensive wines and medium priced wines and probably a few more expensive wines.
And what about our Lidls and Aldis, which we all seem to be you know, taken to the shelves there for the cheaper bottles, trying to find something that tastes passable, drinkable.
Well, I suppose in the recession, Catherine, people's budgets were severely curtailed. So isn't it better that people treat themselves to the odd bottle to get over after a hard week? It doesn't matter where you buy it, as long as they buy the odd bottle here and there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think people are a bit judgmental and a bit snooty about sort of saying, oh, it came from such and such supermarket. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? You know,
find something that you like and works for your price range. Mary, tell me this. Why is it so hard to get a decent glass of wine in a pub? And please compare old and new world wines.
Why is it so difficult to get a decent glass of wine in a pub? Well, I think those of us in the industry are working very hard to improve that. Mm. What would happen? Again, you had a problem with staff there. Sometimes somebody said to me recently that they asked for a glass of wine in a pub recently, and the girl sort of said, well, we have red and white. And she said, yeah, but where is the white from? And the girl came back and all excited and she said, oh, it's from Sauvignon Blanc.
Right.
And she said, right, OK. But I would like to see a greater, more wine. And you see, for many, there wasn't enough wine being sold in pubs. So maybe the bottle was open for several days, or maybe it was even open, as it happened to me when I complained about a glass of white wine. And I said to the girl, is this bottle long open? And she said to me, this is a number of years ago, and she said, oh, no, this was opened at Christmas. And this was July.
Oh my God.
So it was.
Well, on that, actually, a listener's text in. How long can you keep a bottle of wine open for?
Well, I'd say by day three is well deteriorating. And okay. It would want to be, you know, you could be using your pump on it and it could be kept in the fridge. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question coming in here. God, you've gotten the whole country talking about wine. My daughter is getting married. We need 150 bottles. We're going to be charged €8 corkage per bottle. Any suggestion for a combination of red and white?
€8 per bottle. That seems very expensive.
It does, doesn't it?
In current times.
Okay, so first things first, listener, is go back and try and haggle with the corkage charge.
And we don't know what the menu is, so it's a bit difficult.
Yeah. So
But I always think for a wedding, if it's early in the day, you don't want either the reds or the whites to be too heavy. Mm. Or people would be asleep by half four.
Mm.
Yeah.
Why is it difficult to find vegan wines? Because how many of us drink it?
Yes. Well, there are one or two companies who specialise in the importation of vegan wines. Vegan wines, really what this lady is talking about, vegan wines is where they don't find the wines with egg whites. So
right.
Any wines that are not found with egg whites should be, she should be, and that would be a majority of wines that are, I'm not talking about the Great Bordeaux or Burgundies or something like that, but the other wines, a lot of New World wines would have very little egg white
in them. Yeah. When you see réservé on wine, what does that mean? Somebody wants to know.
Réservé means it has additional age and it is usually aged in oak for longer. She's obviously probably talking about Spanish wines, mm-hmm. the Riojas and other Spanish wines. Reserva. Now, reserve, sometimes you'll see on other wines coming from New World, it doesn't have any legal terminology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the whole snobbery that used to exist around wine, is it dissipating?
Yeah, it's dissipating, yes,
yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not before time.
Absolutely.
And how it ever started, I don't know. Because if you think about it, like, we were drinking wines in this country in 1200, you know, so where did all this, I'm not so sure at what stage it started. But then I think we've turned into a nation of snobs about food as well, haven't we?
Absolutely.
You analyse every mouthful, you go everywhere as if you're never going to get another bite.
Absolutely. Well, listen, We are, thank you very much for coming in and having a chat to us.
Thank you, Catherine.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Nominate your favourite red and your favourite affordable red and favourite affordable white for the weekend.
Affordable red for the weekend. Well, I'm a great fan of this. I'm going to pick a few for you, Catherine. I'm going to pick I think affordable white for the weekend. I think you could do worse than try a bottle of Rueda made from the Verdeco grape would be one.
Okay.
And for a red, I would go for something like maybe a Corvina from the north of Italy.
Lovely stuff.
Right.
All right, you've got us all organised for the weekend.
Yeah, Catherine.
Mary Gator, thank you very much for coming.
Enjoy your weekend. And thank you very much, Catherine, for inviting me.